is Jeffrey Guest. Welcome to Des Moines.
Thank you.
First, I want to thank you. I'm a bankruptcy practitioner, Chapter 11. Thank you for sponsoring the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2018. You've already been...
Yes, it's a nerd.
It's a nerd. It's absolutely a nerd.
But it really matters to families in trouble and small businesses in trouble. So I'm just going to nerd out with you. It's a good bill. Okay.
Much appreciated. You've already hit on one of my top issues, which is the corrupting influence of money policy. Personally, my second issue is defense of the separation of church and state. It's been under tremendous attack. Would you give us your thoughts on that?
So, now, we talk about in separation of church and state the importance of each person being able to, for free exercise, to be able to worship as you want. What worries me now in America is whether that's turning into a weapon. You know, when I see a case like Hobby Lobby, in which a corporation's free exercise has to be protected, and that means the corporation does not have to provide a full range of health services for women. This has become, in a case like Hobby Lobby, a tool just to advance an ideological agenda. I think Hobby Lobby is wrong. I think it's, and we have to fight back on this. Look, I was a great Sunday school teacher. That's a long story in this life. All I can say is no one was injured. It was a very low bar. But I believe this is what makes our country great, is that people are free to choose their religion or to choose no religion at all. But they don't get to be adopted.
First of all, thank you for coming to Iowa to bring a positive message. I wanted to ask, how do you debate someone who isn't interested in civility or facts?
Did you have someone specific in mind?
Preface that with it's for you, a question for you, but like also for us, like what we do.
So here's how I see this. We have a chance now, over the next year and three quarters, to get out there and talk about something we haven't talked about nearly enough. And that is what we're fighting for. And I believe that when we get a chance to do that, we can actually come together. Remember I told you I grew up in Oklahoma? All three of my brothers still live in Oklahoma. And one of my three brothers is a Democrat. We're working on it. But here's good. Here's the deal. I love all three of my brothers. And what I believe is that whatever else is going on, the noise and the nonsense and the wind and the craziness, we gotta stay focused on what matters to us. And what matters to us is that everybody gets a fighting chance to build something. What matters to us is that people get a chance to get an education without getting crushed by student loan debt. What matters to us is that people get access to health care that they can afford, and it's real, and it's there in rural hospitals and communities all across this country. I think that when we talk, I have to tell you, I've been talking about corruption for a while now, but still, get your values in perfection. So yes. But here's the deal. You don't have to persuade people. You don't have to, but let me show you the 45 pieces of evidence of corruption. Democrats, Republicans, and Independents get it. Okay, not 100% of it. There are some who are signed on in a different direction. But they get it. They know our government is broken, and they know that it's broken for all those who've already made it big, and it's not working for their families. And that needs to be the place that we start. That's how we begin to build a movement and change this country. That's what I do.
Letting students refinance their loans through the post office.
Yep.
And I haven't heard that for a while, but I think that's a great idea.
Thank you.
So I think as Democrats, we need to run as the party of the people.
Yep.
And what do you think is the big anchor issue that we can use, not just to join progressives together, but the American people, so they understand that you're fighting for not just the middle class, we need to help build up the middle class. How can we build up the working class?
So it's a great question. And for me, the center part of this is about opportunity. You know, look, like I said earlier, it's not like I have tested this out with some focus groups or done a bunch of polling. I'm in this fight that's been the same fight of my lifetime. And it's a fight to make sure that the chances I got are there for other kids. That the chances to build something are real. And I watch every day as those chances are denied to young people, that they are denied to people of color, they're denied to immigrants, they're denied to people in the LGBTQ community, they're denied to Native Americans, over and over and over. A rocky path gets rockier and rockier. I believe that what we need to fight for is an America where it's just a level playing field. I don't think people are asking for a handout. They just got a chance that they're hard to play out of those computers. And I think that's where we're starting. And I do have to say, we got to call corruption out. We got to call for it.
Okay, we got some more. 92, 61, 92, 96, under the eye, 93, 53. Got those tickets, there are two mics. That side, this side, just make your way on up there. Bring your ticket on. Come on up. This system works really well in Massachusetts, I'm told.
It does. It's gonna work in Des Moines. The idea is everybody gets a chance to ask a question, not just the people who run to the front. So let's see if we can make this work. We got somebody? Hi, go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Amber Sellers, and I'm from Kansas, Olathe, Kansas, well, Shawnee, Kansas specifically. Travel 3 hours to be here. And
that's a commitment. I'm impressed.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I want to say that you are probably one of the most natural feeling candidates that I have met, and that speaks volumes. And I hope that this is not the last time we see you, and that we see you in a more presidential. Yeah. I am a recent public administration graduate, and my focus was health equity and housing. And I want to know, as a someone who was on the grassroots, who experiences housing inequality, who is rent burdened, who does not work a job that will allow them the opportunity to own a home, and I know your building you recently.
I'm going to talk about it.
Yes, please talk about it, because I know maybe there's probably a lot of people here who don't know about it. But as someone who's on the ground, what can I do to keep pushing that message in my community about inclusivity and housing affordability for everyone?
Okay, thank you. So, how many people in here worry about the rising cost of housing? Yeah, finance, right? So here's the deal in America. Let's really walk out for a minute here. New construction in America has moved to the high end. So if you're rich, there's a lot of housing opportunities. But if you're middle class, working poor, or poor, what's basically happened is there hasn't been much new housing coming in. The government has backed out from what it was doing. And the consequence is housing is deteriorating. And at the same time, the price is going up because of the demand. So what can we do about it? I'll tell you exactly what we can do about it. We can build 3.2 million new housing units across this country. Everybody, we can do this. What would be the consequence of doing that? First is we produce about 1.5 million jobs, local jobs, good jobs. That's a good part. Second, we would bring down, according to Moody's, the price of rents, instead of their continuing to go up, by about 10%. That's their estimate. And think about it. You bring 3.2 million new housing units online. It affects prices overall, not just the new units you bring in, because it affects the market. But that's not all we need to do. Housing, I was talking about it earlier. The number one way that families, working families, middle-class families build wealth is to buy a home. And that's how it's worked generation after generation for white families, but not for African-American and Latino families. And here's the deal. Not just because of gravity, not just because that's how it worked out. It was official government policy to redline African-American neighborhoods and prevent them from participating in housing wealth until the mid-1960s. Think about that. That was the policy of our government. And many of those redline neighborhoods have never recovered. So that's how we end up with African-American home ownership rates back where they were when housing discrimination was legal. So what is this housing bill proposed to do? 3.2 million new units. But it also says we need to take a first step toward rectifying the wrongs of the past. I'll tell you one more point about this bill. It also requires that we put the money in to fully fund our obligations for housing on our native reservations. Something that for just a minute. So this is an expensive plan. There's a lot to this plan, but a lot of help for a lot of people. How do you pay for something? I got an answer. And the answer is, if we just go back to the estate taxes and tax the families that were taxed upon death during the George W. Bush administration, okay, that's all it is. It's just that far back. We can raise enough money to pay for 3.2 million new housing units and not cost American taxpayers a single dime. So. About money talks. So I go talk to experts in Washington. I put this bill together. I talk about this will be senior housing. This will be housing for people with disabilities. This has so many places, housing in rural areas where it's falling apart. Lots of good stuff that comes out of this. Remember, 3.2 million new housing units, plus all the spillover good effects from this and jobs. And who would help pay for this? The 10,000 richest families in America. And do you know what people in Washington say to me? You can never do that. Because 10,000 rich families have so much more power in Washington than millions of American families who are struggling to pay. So what I say to them, you just wait till 2020.
So, Senator Warren, you've talked a lot about...
Tell me your name.
My name's Andreas.
Nice to see you, Andreas.
You talked a lot about tackling corruption at a national level and national politics, but I want to talk about tackling corruption at a party level. So given some of the undemocratic behavior between the DNC and Hillary's campaign and
Sanders,
what are the impacts of your tackling party for a more fair and transparent primary
law? Okay. One is, I'm not relitigating 2016. I think right now, in a 2020 presidential primary, that as Democrats, we have a chance to strengthen democracy. And here's how I think we ought to do it. I think that all of the Democratic candidates, wherever they turn out to be, should link arms and say, our primary is not for sale to billionaires. Yes. Want super PACs to help us, and none of us believe that billionaires ought to be able to self-finance. It ought to be about building a movement, person by person by person. This is how we will build democracy. This is how we restore confidence in the Democratic Party. We are the party of the people, but we gotta walk the walk. Make it a good one. And then we'll do pictures.
Bienvenido, Iowa, Elizabeth Warren. Many of them are offshoring to Ireland, to other offshore locations, and I want to know what we can do in 2020 to incentivize them to stay here and balance their responsibility towards our communities, because we've built their wealth, and I think it's an opportunity in 2020, and I want to hear what we can do.
This is great. So, great question about locations, and I'll just do kind of a short version of this, and what it starts with. Kind of the core of what this is about is back to the point about corruption. Why do you think the tax bill gave away $1.5 trillion to giant corporations, multinational corporations, and billionaires? Think about it. The estimate that I saw was that these multinationals that got literally, think about it, hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks. 40% of their shareholders are even here in the United States. So we just gave away. We gave away money. Why do we give away money? Because Washington is corrupt. Because money talks. So part of it has to be. This is why I was talking about systemic change, structural change. We've got to start with an anti-corruption bill. I got a question. Tax code and follow. This is going to be a really shocking principle. You guys ready? Everybody should pay a fair share. But there's one more I want to throw in this, and that is corporate behavior is determined by corporations themselves. And up until the early 1980s, you can look at corporate minutes, you can look at the groups that represented corporations, and you know what they say? They say, here in America, and Prosper, corporations have a responsibility to their shareholders, to their employees, to their customers, to their communities. That is how it works. And it used to be the case that as corporations got richer, everybody participated. That the workers got richer too. Everybody got a bigger slice of pie. That changed in the late 80s, and corporations said it's only one thing. It's shareholder wealth, and we are here to maximize it, even if it means we're making big money. And we lay off our American workers to go somewhere else. We dump all kinds of poisons in the river because it improves our profitability. That's the way corporations have shifted over time. And they don't want to talk about this. They have PR firms. You know, they put little green logos on things. But understand, the rules that govern corporations are not just up to corporations. They're up to you and me. So I have a proposal for something called accountable capitalism that says, yes, that the giant corporations have to get a charter that requires them to respond not just to their shareholders, but their employees, their customers, and their communities. And I think employees ought to be able to elect, let's say, 40% of the board. That would change it.
Because I'm going to lose even further control of the center. After this, you're going to go say hello to these folks down here, and the senator's going to stay and see as many people as she can. As the time will schedule allow, and we'll work this way. So, congratulations on the first trip and the last question.
Okay, last question.
Thank you for being here, Senator.
Thank you.
All of a sudden, this country no longer talks about the national debt.
Yeah.
It just grows and grows and grows. Again, I'm very impressed. Actually, I'm just stunned that Donald Trump turns around and gives giant tax breaks while our national debt goes up. And he's given it to corporations that are trying to destroy the unions, and many, many workers do not keep up.
Yeah.
My question for you is, when you get to be president of the United States, can you tell us about the true work of the Senate, the House, and the presidency toward a national budget meeting?
You bet.
And that we would have a
Wait, the last few words. Let me say on this. We need to make our dollars, our budgets, work for our people. And I agree, our national debt right now is a drag on our young people, on their future. It is obscene what America has done. That America went to war 17 years ago and put it on a credit card for our children to pay. That is fundamentally wrong. That America gave away $1.5 trillion in tax breaks. Fundamentally wrong. But I think the way we're going to have to do this is going to be down in the trenches. We've got to rewrite our tax laws. We've got to come back in this economy. And we've got to make the investments again. The investments in infrastructure. The investments in education. The investments in
would you be willing to roll back the past Donald Trump.
You for the billionaires and the big corporations, you bet. So, first, thank you all for being here. I really do appreciate
this. Oh, sorry.
But, let me say something about this one. You know, this is about draining debt. And it's about fighting hard. It's about making structural change. Not a nibble here and a piece of language. And a lot of people say, that's just too hard. You just can't do that. It is just too hard. So let me just say to all of you, people told me after the financial crash, we could never get a consumer agency. That crash was caused one lousy mortgage overdraft, one giant bank that cheated one family, another family, another family, targeted communities of color, targeted young people, targeted seniors, and crushed them. But people said to me, the banks have all the money, and they will prevail. They spent more than $1 million a day for more than a year lobbying against financial reforms, in particular that consumer agency. But here's the deal. We have nothing on our side. We didn't have money. We didn't have big groups on our side. But we got organized. We fought back. And the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is the law today. Stay in there. We'll take another one. Back in 2011, 2012, I got a whole bunch of phone calls from people who said to me, you know, I love you, Elizabeth, but Massachusetts is not going to elect a woman to the Senate. All I want to say is we got organized. We fought back. I am now the senior senator of the country. Wells Fargo. Heard Wells Fargo, I can tell. So Wells Fargo cheats millions of its customers, decides the way to deal with that is fire a bunch of people who make $15 an hour. Right? And we saw what happened during the crash. The CEOs of the giant banks, they just rolled in the money, right? Stayed in their jobs. People said to me, you can't get any accountability, personal accountability from the executives of a big company like Wells Fargo. But all I can say is, you get in that fight, you push back, and the CEO of Wells Fargo is gone. Yeah. Is he how it's hard? Well, damn, a lot of things are hard. If they weren't hard, somebody else would have already done it. But we are Americans. And we have a history of coming together to fight the hard fights. The abolitionists. They said this is too hard. The suffragettes. These folks were told it's too hard. Give up before you start. But they organized, they persisted, and they changed America. I'm here tonight because I believe in what we can do. I believe that this, right now, is our moment. Our moment to dream big, to fight hard, and to take back this country for the